We're going to flip the switch over and say good morning to Dr. Calvin Parker. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
And how are you?
I've been busy.
You have been busy. But you keep such a level head, people realize that they just think you're really a list of a guy on our smooth operator list. I mean, you don't have show a lot of stress. I mean, you keep it cool headed.
Oh, I'm not sure about that. I must put on a good front.
Yeah, I think you do put on a good front. But you were a big hit last time you came. You gave us some fantastic information, and we thought that we'd have you back on again because, you know, we're just information overload about this coronavirus, and I'm hoping that we're getting close to a peak time here in our area. We'll let you discuss about that. But where we are right now, where are we in your opinion with this virus here in our area?
Well, you know, if you look at the way the virus has spread across the world, we see it slowing down overseas. And they think that we're starting to see some slowing in the Northeast. So you would think that we're coming up on some peak pretty soon. Not sure exactly when that is. We have been seeing with increased testing and with patients in the hospital an increase over this last week or so. And usually following behind that, we see a peak and a slowing of the transmission and hospitalizations and disease. So, you know, we're coming up on it. When it's going to be, nobody knows, mm-hmm. but it sure has this feeling like we're getting close.
Okay. Well, they've certainly, and of course, you know, they always say, well, the numbers can be misleading because we're getting in more tests than we were several weeks ago. You know, they're starting to get the results in faster. So it looks like there's more, but it may just be because we're getting more test results. Is that right?
Oh, that's definitely true. Right. Yeah. So, you know, in the beginning, we had no test, so we had no cases.
Right.
And the more you test people, the more you're going to find disease. So the numbers itself are a little bit can be misinterpreted. We knew this was coming. We talked about this last time I was on the show.
Right.
You know, we talked about the fact that as we test more people, the numbers are going to go up. We tried to reassure people, listen, as you see these numbers change, try not to panic. We know it's coming because we're going to start testing more people. So none of this is a surprise, but it looks like through all the efforts nationwide and worldwide, it looks like, you know, the numbers aren't going to be as bad as predicted, which is meaning we did some good things, right?
Yeah,
some of these hard things we've had to do with social distancing and quarantine and shutting down certain businesses. You know, we think it's put a slowing of the spread, and that's always a good thing. So it looks like our efforts have paid off.
Wanted to talk to you a little bit more than we did last time about the spread of this the coronavirus, because now that we've had a few more cases in our area, and this just past weekend they had to close down the courthouse because of a person testing positive. So, you know, the first thing they talked about is, okay, where is this person gone? And we have to shut those buildings down. I mean, tell us your thoughts about that and how, you know, how it's transmitted.
So we have to remember that this is a new virus. So we don't know everything about it, and the information changes on a weekly, if not daily, basis. I work in the field and do this every day, and some days I wake up confused, overloaded with all the stuff. You watch one news channel to the next, and you got one expert telling you it's, you know, pass this way, you don't need to wear a mask. Then the next day, the CDC is saying, hey, we need to wear a mask to go to the grocery store.
Exactly.
One day, it's only a human virus. The next day, wait, there's a dog in, you know, overseas that's got it. There's a tiger in the New York Zoo that's got it.
Yeah.
So we just have to keep in mind that, you know, this is a changing field of information, and people are reassessing weekly and daily and making new recommendations. Anytime I get overloaded with information, I try to just take a deep breath, back up, and go back to the basics. The basics over this viral infection is it's a respiratory disease. It affects the respiratory tract, the nasopharyngeal area, the lungs. It's a primarily pulmonary disease. So if you think about that, and you kind of think about it with the comparing it to something like influenza, primarily it's going to be passed through respiratory secretions. So coughing directly in somebody's face, sharing saliva with someone, those are very high risk situations where the amount of virus transferred is going to be higher and your risk of getting it is going to go up. Now, so that's the most contagious way, is for someone to cough directly in your face or to exchange body fluids,
okay,
respiratory fluids. After that, there is some proof that the virus lives in an aerosol form. When someone coughs, and it can kind of float in the air for a few hours is what they've tested in the lab. 2 or 3 hours, it can kind of float around, if you picture like smoke floating around. But it's a lot less likely than the secretion. So that's another way that we think sometimes it can be passed, but it's a lot less likely. And then the least likely would be from touching a surface and then directly going back to your face. I try to remind my patients that there's only 5 ways that you know this virus can enter your body, or 5 places it can enter your body: your eyes, your nose, and your mouth.
Okay.
And so you have to have live virus on your hands and then go straight to your face,
right,
to transmit it that way. So those are the ways that you can transmit it. But, you know, whether the pets can transmit it, we don't think so. Inanimate surfaces, depending on how long it's been on the surface, we're not exactly sure about that. But it's almost like you have to treat everything like it's contaminated.
Right. Well, you're already making me feel better about that, because that means you can't get it through your skin. So if you touch a doorknob, as long as you're not taking your hand and putting it in your mouth after that, you should be fine.
That's what we see right now. So that's the whole wash your hands after you touch something. If you wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water, anything that you got off the doorknob should be gone. And theoretically, if you were to go to your face after that, you shouldn't pass it that way. But no, we have no evidence it's going to go through the skin.
Okay. Well, and I think that's probably number one, that people, you know, because we wipe everything down. I'll wipe everything down in here because I don't know. I'm not sure.
Right.
But you're definitely going to save me a lot of time tomorrow. That's for sure, doing that. Now, let's just say someone does a cough on a doorknob, and then I go and grab it. How long is that active on my hand?
Well, you remember, when they're studying this virus, most of this is done in a laboratory setting. So sometimes you can't take what happens in a lab and translate it to real life. As far as things living on in the air, we think a few hours. On the surfaces, depends on the surface. If it's cardboard, I think they said up to a day. If it's plastic, we think up to 3 days. As far as on the human skin, I don't recall seeing an exact number for that. But our human skin is something easy we can wash with hand washing or hand sanitizer.
Okay. So it sounds like to me you're better off not wearing gloves, because gloves gives you a false sense of security and you don't know how many things you actually touch, as opposed to when you go somewhere or you're around people that you're not, you know, familiar with or don't know where they've been, you just wash your hands.
So, you know, some of us in the healthcare do have had a slight giggle with the whole glove thing.
Yeah.
Because remember, in our setting, we're changing gloves all day long.
Right.
You know, if someone had the option of wearing gloves to the grocery store or washing their hands, you know, when they leave the store and they're not touching their face in the store, I'd rather you use hand sanitizer and wash your hands. If you wear gloves in the grocery store and somehow contact the virus and then go to your face, it does no good.
Right.
Remember, it's not going to enter through your skin, so the gloves aren't protecting you from that. And if you only have one set of gloves, it's not like you can wash them while you're in the store. If you didn't have the gloves and you had some hand sanitizer, you could, you know, lather it on your hands several times while you're in the store if you wanted to. That'd be better than wearing a set of gloves,
right,
in my opinion.
Have you had, in your profession, have you had trouble getting, gloves and sanitizer and stuff? Or
we have not had trouble, but we've, you know, regularly stockpile it. So, you know, prior to this even happening, we had a good supply in the office. So that has not been an issue. And, you know, in the, in the way I'm practicing right now, we're not seeing a lot of patients in the office, so it's not like we're going through a lot of supplies, unlike emergency rooms or urgent care clinics who may have a different problem than I have.
What's the question you get more than anything? Have we already talked about it, or is there another question?
Well, here's what I deal with most, Gary, is someone who works with someone who knows someone who has it.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of second or third or fourth person down the line, and they don't know what to do. That's what I get most. And remember, this is a communicable disease, and so if somebody gets diagnosed, it's reported to the authorities, and the authorities are going to contact that person. And then we just had to do this the other day with the county. We have to get on the phone, talk to that person, and go through a very detailed history of how long they've been sick and where they've been. And then we have to give it to the staff, and the staff has to contact people who are considered to be at risk. Just because you walked by somebody briefly who has the disease, yeah, doesn't mean that you're at high risk.
Right.
You know, we consider a contact someone who has either been within 6 feet of that person for a prolonged period of time, and they don't give us a definition. They just say for a prolonged period of time, or someone who has directly coughed or sneezed into your face. Those people are the ones that we worry about the most. There have been people who test positive and they have casual contacts, maybe someone who works in the office, but they work on the other side and they just casually pass in the hall. Those people aren't at high risk and don't have to be quarantined most of the time.
Okay.
Usually people living with the contact, you know, intimate contact such as that, or someone who has been in an exam room, like a healthcare provider, taking care of that patient for a prolonged period of time. Brief episodes, as long as you've kept your distance and they didn't cough in your face, the chances of you getting it are very slim.
The person that that is the employee of the sheriff's department, how are they doing right now?
I don't want to speak for that person,
right,
but I did reach out to that person, and the report I got back was that they were doing better. That was at the time that I contacted them. So luckily for us, most of the cases you know, have been milder cases. Obviously, we've had some deaths in the area, which are always tragic. We've got patients that are, you know, in the ICU needing supportive care. For the most, you know, we know this with the flu as well. Most people who get sick with it don't end up in the hospital. Most people don't end up succumbing to the disease. But you never know who is, so you have to treat it, you know, you have to respect it. That's what I tell people too, is look, I don't fear coronavirus, but I respect it. I respect it enough to wash my hands, keep my distance, cover my face, and look for the symptoms if I were to get it.
Sanitizer has been a hard thing to come by.
Mm-hmm.
And of course there is just plain old hand soap, but a lot of times when you're in your vehicle and stuff, mm-hmm, like that, you don't have that access.
Mm-hmm.
What do we have any other alternatives that we can try, make, whatever it is?
Well, you know, the alcohol preparations in the hand sanitizer and using something in that form is the most logical and easy to get. As far as surfaces go, there's a recipe of mixing a certain amount of bleach, like a third, mm-hmm, of a cup with a gallon.
Right.
That can clean the surfaces. There's commercial sanitized wipes that people use and sprays to clean it. As far as the skin, good old soap and water and washing it off is the best. And remember, going back to how you get it, it's got to enter through your respiratory tract. If you were to touch it and you're in your car and you're worried, as long as you don't go to your face, you're not going to give it to yourself, as far as we know.
Yeah.
So if we could just quit touching our face, even if it was on your hands, until you can get to a sink or until you can get to some sanitizer, you're okay.
Well, and that leads me to one of the other things. You know, we're not getting a contact with people, but yet the one thing we're allowing is for people to go and pick up food at restaurants and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, someone's preparing your food, you know, and accidentally or whatever reason, you know, cough on your food, and then they give it to you through the window. I mean, what are we looking at there?
Well, you know, going out to dinner is something that we miss, right?
Right.
Going out,
I understand,
and socializing, and you know, dinner's one of my favorites. So having to go somewhere and pick it up and bring it home is carries its own risk, I assume, but we don't think that it can live in the food itself. And the best advice I saw is, you know, if you were to pick up takeout, you bring it home, you take it out of the container, put it in your plate, throw the container in the trash, and then wash your hands immediately. Okay. So we don't think it can be, you know, live in the food itself, especially food that's been properly prepared. But as far as the surfaces, like the plastic containers and the styrofoam, those should probably go in the trash right away. Are they high risk? I don't know that they're high risk, but why would you take any risk if you can just transfer it to a plate until we know more?
Exchanging money. From people I've seen where people actually take the dollar bills and spray them down. Is that a good idea, or just wash your hands after you handle the money?
I think you wash your hands. I mean, we were raised knowing, you know, being told money's dirty, right?
Right.
I mean, that's what I was always told growing up. So because it touches so many hands.
Right.
I think just washing your hands, Gary. I think if we could wash our hands, not touch our face, social distancing, some of this, you know, we could take this so far to the nth degree where we're so paralyzed of not wanting
paranoid,
to touch anything,
yeah.
cleaning 24/7. Not that that's a bad thing, but, you know, there's a balance between worrying yourself to death and staying healthy.
So what happens when we peak and this thing slows down and we try to get back to a little bit of normalcy? Where are we at then? And what's your opinion of how life changes or where we go from here?
Well, you know, like any viral epidemic or pandemic, the virus tends to run its course through humans and then kind of go away for a while. And so if we can get the numbers to decrease where we're not having as many new cases, then us going back to our normal activity where we don't have to maintain this 6 feet and we don't have to go out in the public in masks becomes easier. What I think's going to happen is, you know, I think we have a new normal, and, you know, I start thinking about the numbers go down and we go back to our normal, semi-normal state. And then the next time somebody coughs around you, what happens? You start getting nervous, right?
Yeah,
next
right.
time you have a tickle in your throat, you get nervous. And I was thinking about concerts, ball games, you know, crowded situations.
Right.
I think there's going to be a certain fear in people that's going to take a long time to go away. And I think it's going to have a profound effect on how we gather,
you know,
whether it be concerts or ball games. And so I think about that. But, you know, the numbers, you know, just like influenza tends to die down in the summer and come back every year, I'm sure we're going to be dealing with this again. But, you know, on the bright side is when this thing comes back, we're going to know a lot more than we know now, right? We know more today than we knew last week, and we're going to know a lot more in the fall than we know now. So as far as how it's transmitted, we'll know more. How to prevent it, we'll know more. At some point, we'll have a vaccine, less virus in the community.
You talked about that. I want you to bring that up again. That from what we, all this information, what we're being told, this virus does not like heat. So as we get into the summer months, I mean, that's obviously going to be a bit better for us. If you're a person that works out or runs and you create body heat, is that?
I don't recall. I don't want to misspeak. I can't recall off the top of my head the certain effect of heat, but we do see with a lot of viruses, they tend to peak in the wintertime and tend to lessen in the winter, summer. And I don't know if it has to do with the heat or whether it has to do with how we congregate. You know, in the winter months, we're all crammed together because of the weather.
Right.
And in the summertime, we tend to spread out and be outside. So it's probably a combination of both. It sure would be nice if heat would kill it, right?
Yeah.
And then down here in Southeast Texas, we ought to be safe.
Yeah, right about the time hurricane season starts, and then we'll get rid of this virus. At least that's what we're hoping. That's for sure. Doc, anything else you want to tell our audience that I haven't asked you?
We still have this regional center set up in Jefferson County for people who think they need to be tested or they have some concerns. You call the number and they'll give you an interview over the phone. And if they think you are proper to be tested, they'll get you over there, set you up an appointment. We've gotten a lot quicker, and usually same day or next day you'll be tested. Get results back right now, 24 to 72 hours later. We've got 31 positives in orange. We've got 72 out there pending as of last night. We've got 93 negatives, and we've got one person listed as recovered. And so let's hope these numbers start to go down pretty soon. And if you have questions, call your doctor, call the health department, or you can call that number in Jefferson County that we have set up to help the Orange County residents.
And once again, make that phone call first. Don't just show up at your doctor's office or emergency room.
Yeah, most of us don't want you walking in right at this moment until we talk to you and screen whether it's even safe for you to come in.
Exactly. Dr. Calvin Parker, as always, buddy, we thank you for taking your time out and coming in and visiting with us. And we may make this a little more regular deal and have you come in and talk to us. Everybody seems to enjoy it, so we appreciate that.
Thanks for having me, Gary.
All right, Dr. Calvin Parker, it's 22 after 8 o'clock. You're listening to